muted, so that probably doesn't help. Share digital. Oh.
Perfect. You're all good.
Okay,
Awesome.
thank you. I let my performance anxiety cause me to delay coming up here as long as possible, which is why I'm now having to mess around with Zoom. So, anyway, hi, thank you for coming. I'm Jen Koltz. I am at Cornell, and I'm in our, oops, I should stand over here. I'm in our library technical services, and I'm the head of our little automation unit. And within the Folio community, I'm on the technical council. And right now I'm the co-chair of the technical council. I've been on council for 4 years. This will be my last year because we are term limited. And yeah, so today I'm going to talk about counting and crediting non-code contributors. If you saw the keynote this morning, I feel like this slides in really well to a lot of what she was talking about, both in terms of how people feel about being in your community and as people trying to lead the community, understanding what's happening. This can be important. Sort of one of the things that you hear people say is the things that you count are the things that you pay attention to. And so that's part of the reason I think counting these other kinds of contributions can be important. If anything is going wrong online, feel free to unmic and tell me, or unmute and tell me, because I really can't tell. So,
Yeah, we'd love
what
to be able to see you.
to see me? Okay.
Yes, but we can hear you fine.
Did that work? Now I see myself.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
assuming so. Okay. Great. And can I get back here? Okay. So non-code contributions. Although now I've got my we're talking about things like documentation, all of that bug fest testing that people in the Folio community do. DevOps and SysOps. So this isn't just like non-technical work. It's work that isn't represented in a GitHub code repository as like a code commit. So it still might be technical work, but it's not part of that like core software product. Accessibility work, governance, as we heard about this morning, bug reporting, doing product ownership, design, participating in SIGs and user groups, like all of these things that sort of make the community a community, but don't result in code. So, more definitions. For counting and crediting, I was thinking about this in terms of the two perspectives, both from the person doing the work and from the project. So, counting, I was thinking about from the perspective of the project. As a project leader, you want to understand who is doing what work, what kind of the characteristics of those people might be, where they're coming from. Sorry.
Did you want to share
Oh, with them? I'm so bad at this.
Jen, you're not bad at it.
You're doing great.
You're good at it.
I've been a much worse person.
You're not the worst we've ever seen. Okay, good. Thank you. And now I gotta get back to my view. Okay, there we go. Oops, now I'm editing. All right. So counting, helping the project understand what's happening, how contributors are spending their time, how contributors move through the project over time. Like, does someone join and then go, ah, there's nothing for me here and leave? Or do they show up for a SIG meeting and 2 years later they're a SIG convener? Do they move on to governance? Like, how is that experience looking over time for people? And then from the perspective of the folks contributing, how is my contribution acknowledged? What shows that I can demonstrate that I did this work? Are there artifacts? Is my name somewhere maybe? And what opportunities arise from my work? Like, whether it's networking opportunities or the chance to come and present. You know, when we're talking about libraries, a lot of librarians have a promotion process and they need evidence to demonstrate that they're participating in library communities. And then both of these have a relationship to influence, which is really complicated in open source, and sort of a relationship to rewards. So when you're thinking about influence, you, as a project, you want to be able to allow lots of voices to have influence. And you also want to be able to reward people who are doing a lot of work, possibly with more influence, right? You might, this is complicated for other reasons, but let's just say you sort of expect that as you do more work, you might have the chance to have more influence in the project. And as the contributor, you want to be able to see, not necessarily that like the feature you want got built, but that the work you did had a positive effect. There's less bugs or things happen faster. People feel more welcome. Documentation that didn't exist now does. Like, there's a way that you can see that your influence is positively affecting the community. And in terms of rewards for contributors, there is just the opportunity to develop skills when you participate in open source. So that's like a very internal reward. There's a chance to meet, I mean, certainly in the Folio community and other communities I participated in, you get to meet tons of people, which is really wonderful. And then you also have the chance maybe to go back to your institution and say, I have these skills. Now I know these people. Now I can do this sort of thing. And that can have more positive extrinsic rewards. So when we're thinking about counting code contributions, there's a lot of open source work around counting code, partly because of GitHub. You can get onto GitHub and be like, here's the 30 people that contribute regularly to this repository. And it's just kind of there for you to count. There's also tools like Jira, where you might have your developers represented. So that's, being able to go into GitHub and count is a big reason people feel like they can measure that code interaction that developers are having. In some communities, this is obviously Folio language, teams own modules or features, and they have a high level of influence over what is happening in that space. In other projects, you know, it could be the team that works at the host institution. They own it, and so there's some direct connection there. There can be a relationship between the financial sponsor and the modules or features, so there might be people know who funded this work, and so there's some amount of, you know, the code is being written by the developers, but it's sort of understood who is supporting it financially. And that these things can kind of combine so that that ownership and responsibility and credit tracks to specific aspects of the software and to specific development teams. Whereas a lot of the other kinds of contributions that we're talking about are kind of amorphous, right? Accessibility is throughout the product. It's not just in one feature. Did I get the right? Okay. So how do we credit non-code contributions? You know, my outcome here is not great. So sometimes non-code contributors do get to be part of a development team, and that tends to actually be a really lovely experience for them. They get to really feel like they're part of the team, they're valued. You know, they worked on this UX design, the team appreciates them. Members of governance tend to get credited, like our names are on those lists. You know, they might be on the wiki. If it's the higher ups, they might even be out on the website and not just the wiki. But what about folks like who write all the documentation, who do all the testing, who show up to SIG meetings? Like, a lot of these contributions kind of seem less credited. I'll also say that I'm definitely not going to talk for this whole time. So anytime I say something that you're like, that's wrong, you should remember so we can talk about it later. Okay, it's very confusing to look at the presenter in this. So we talked about this a little bit before, but why do we want to count and credit those other non-code contributions? We do really want to thank people for their work. I think those of us who are part of governance are eternally grateful for the work these people do. But it's not always clear how to get that message out there. And that can be frustrating for people. We do want to encourage people to move along the contributor pipeline. Not everybody can, not everybody has the time, but for folks who do, having a good contributor experience can help them say, ah, going to the SIG was great. I want to be a convener, or I want to be on product council, or I want to be the documentation coordinator, or whatever, that there's space for them to grow in the project. Because we're asking for these folks to take time away from their home institution, we want to be able to say to the institution, this is what your staff time is doing. this is why it's good that you're essentially donating time to this project. And some of that, you know, maybe it's just assumed, oh, we're reporting bugs, and so our bugs are going to get fixed. But I think it can be more explicit and better understood how people are spending their time and how to talk to institutions about that. We want to understand what work is and isn't getting done and how much effort it takes. I think one example of this is in the Folio community, we have all these SIGs, and they kind of, some of them are very stable over time, and some have kind of gone up and down. And when a SIG is kind of in a down, is that leaving work not done that should be getting done? Like, what's in that absence? And then last, we do want people to have artifacts of their effort that they can point to for career purposes. I think we really want open source to be altruistic, and that is wonderful, but people also have to eat, and and you can't do that with just love. So, you know, understanding that part of a contributor's motivation is to build skills and build evidence that they can use for developing their career, I think is important. I think we should welcome that and hope that these experiences serve everybody well.
So then that last point, super thing. And, you know, it seems like this is something within Folio as a project we should actually be promoting as an idea and a concept. Oh, I'm sorry. That last bullet point is super interesting to me because I think it's something as part of
the book.
Poor Harry. Harry's trying to talk. It's we're all having a day.
The third time they'll have that question.
Maybe.
All right, everyone. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Repeat number three. So that last bullet point, at least for me, is really interesting because I don't think this is something that we talk about at all in the Folio community. And I truly believe significant numbers of people have learned all kinds of really great things that I think can help their careers, you know, moving forward in the future. And it sure seems like there's substantial incentive there then to contribute as well. And we should do something about that. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
Oh,
quickly here. Okay. So then, I hope that mic's not making things crazy. So what happens if we don't do this? So without a positive feedback loop with our contributors, we might lose them. We might have them doing less than they could. That is a thing I think in the Folio community. I think there's just people we're missing out on. We misunderstand the work that is happening in the project and underestimate the value of work that is not code. I think right now, within Folio, we're talking about lots of like different development models and ways to think about software marketplaces. And if we think about that in a code-driven way, I think that can be problematic. But if we think about it in a community-driven way, where there's all this work that has to happen around the code, it can be more successful. And then last, if we don't value non-code contributions, then it kind of impacts who is listened to in the project. I think the keynote this morning touched on this a little bit too. Like, are the people who are not developers just a pain in your butt? Or are they contributing something good to the project? And we want to have a culture where the librarians and others who aren't contributing code are still seen as valuable and as doing things that are important and not just as blockers to someone trying to get their code in as quickly as possible. So I thought we might just look at a couple examples of how projects do credit folks. So things like contributor lists on their websites or their wiki or GitHub, acknowledgements and release notes and newsletters, community awards and badges. The whole badge thing really went pretty nuts in open source. I don't know how interested our communities are in badging, but maybe. And then this idea of like roles and governance and decision-making, helping people to see how they can progress their influence in the project. The all contributors specification is an example of how to bring together contributors that are not contributing code. So you essentially create a list in your GitHub repository of all the folks who have made different kinds of contributions. And because that's kind of like an overwhelming thing, they've even created a bot so that you can keep your list updated with a bit of automation. The Chaos Project, which I talked about a couple of years ago, they do a lot of open source health metrics. They keep a repository that is just about their community. So they have code repositories for software that they make, but this repository is just about the community, and that's where they keep their contributor list. And you can see, like, here's a little sample from their list. People are doing all kinds of things in different areas of the project. And if they're doing something that's not going to show up as like a code artifact, they can add it to this list. So what can we do in our own projects? And this is the, hopefully, maybe there'll be some audience participation. So just sort of brainstorming about this from the project perspective, it seems like we have some data that we can mine around like Jira, Slack accounts, who's coming to SIGs, who's participating in governance. And we might want to look at that by like what kind of library folks are coming from, what kind of role they're in. Like, is it, you know, are they writing documentation? Are they a SIG member? Like, what are they doing in the project? For some of our projects, the type of implementation they have can be important, like whether they are self-hosting, whether they're through a vendor, whether they're a consortium, like these can be important. And then location. The first day we had that very proud map of like Folio all over the world, and certainly ViewFind and other projects are all over the world as well. And then for crediting, this idea of building up participant lists, somehow providing information to institutions about how their participation is positively impacting the project, giving people speaking and writing opportunities, because that is important. That's one of the ways you can let somebody create those artifacts for their career. And then helping people to see those progressive contribution opportunities. And then what else? So that is what I have for today. So I was hoping maybe we would have discussion.
Could I jump in? This is Laura.
Yeah.
Jen, first of all, thank you so much for presenting this session. This is so important. Harry just said we're not talking about it, but we actually are talking about it because we're talking about it right now, thanks to you. I wanted to illustrate some of what you're talking about. That in 2017, I went to a SIG meeting. In 2018, I was convening that SIG. And in 2019, I was hired at Cornell. And that was because of my participation in Folio. My career has taken the trajectory it's taken. And I've had a lot of the opportunities I've had because of my engagement with Folio and because people did see that as valuable. Throughout the time I've been engaged with Folio, I can't even remember how many colleagues I've written letters of support for through their promotion processes. I've asked for letters of support. And yet still, I'm coming up on another potential promotion and I'm starting to scramble thinking, what can I show? What can I show and where do I put my effort? And I want to put my effort into Folio because I believe it has impact. But having more artifacts that demonstrate the impact of the work would be so, so valuable. And I would love to be part of anything we decide we could do to do this better. I would like to be part of making it happen.
Awesome. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Laura, the question I was going to ask actually back to you was whether or not you feel, though, that is the need for more artifacts is actually a failing of tenure and promotion like processes to value non-publications. And this is I will be honest, I look for that as the problem. Maybe I'm just being me. But to me, it seems like when I look around, I actually will say I am a full librarian at my institution, but I attempted to be a full librarian because I was hoping they would reject me so that I could prove to them that their process was flawed.
Who is this?
My name is Rosalind Metz. I'm at Emory University.
Oh, you are. You gave an excellent, excellent talk earlier. That's such a good point. The processes are deeply, deeply flawed. And I guess this comes back to where I feel like I have agency in this community to say, hey, we can create these artifacts that will help us get the job security and or authority we need in order to affect more change. Because honestly, Jen and I are actually both part of a group at Cornell that is reviewing our, among other things, our promotion processes, but we don't have the agency to say, hey, we're going to completely change the way our colleagues view our work. But we do have the ability to help each other better explain the value of the work. And I feel like this also comes into play when I'm trying to articulate the value of the work we do outside of Folio, just library technical services in general. It's so helpful to have something to point to that validates that value, that it's not value because I say it is, it's valuable because we all say it is, and we put it in writing.
Well, yeah. And I like part of the reason I have a tendency to harp on that is actually because of individuals like Simeon Warner and Tom Kramer. If you told me, they may not be able to well, I don't know if that's true, but they may not be able to get what is technically tenure and promotion. But if you removed the two of those humans from the equation, we would not be sitting here, right? Like, there's so much that they have done over time. And I see that constantly with individuals that were like devaluing their work. And I have to, it's one of the reasons I hate tenure and promotion. So again, I don't mean to take us down that road, but I think in some way it is valuable to say like, what are we doing it for? Like, why are we trying to hype ourselves up versus why are we trying to, are we trying to prove a point to somebody? Anyway,
I went to library school after working in libraries for 20 years, precisely because I agree with you.
Exactly. And then anyway, some other time we could have a conversation about it.
I would love to.
I really appreciate this conversation, and I was coming at the artifact from a different perspective. I was actually thinking how the artifacts might also help the project because it might force us, at least I'm coming more from reshare than the folio side. I'm more deeply involved in that, but having the chance to reflect on some of the things that we've done would help us as a project in addition to helping people as individuals. And one idea I had, like just thinking about ways to recognize individuals, I don't know if this is a good one, but I remember Rapid ILL used to send personalized letters to each dean at the end of the year saying, hey, this is what Rapid ILL did for you. It would be nice to have like a form letter saying, hey, these people were participating in folio on these committees. I know that that sounds easier than it actually is because we don't have that necessarily easily, you know, pulled into a mail merge. But I really like the idea of recognizing the people that are really doing the work. And even as like project leadership, sometimes I met somebody here at WolfCon who I didn't know was on our product team. I was trying to tell him, hey, our roadmap is being released in a couple of weeks. And he's like, yeah, I know. I've been working on it. So like just being able to connect those dots would be really helpful from my perspective too.
So my name is George Williams for the people online, and I am the Next Search Catalog Coordinator for Northeast Kansas Library System. And it's really interesting for me to hear a lot of this because I manage a shared catalog for 50 public libraries. I'm not in the academic world, so hearing this talk about tenure and all that is completely alien to me. But one of the things that the COHA community does that helps for some things is we do not use Jira. We use a product called Bugzilla, because Bugzilla itself is open source. But we handle all of our changes and documentation through Bugzilla, and they're treated just like any other bug. So all of the documentation is credited in the exact same way that development is credited. And every installation of COHA, one of the elements in that is on the about page, there is a list of the members of the current release team. And it includes every person that has a hand, has an official role in the release of that version of COHA. And it's, you know, I am on the release team for the current version of COHA. I am marked as a wiki curator because I maintain two pages. I curate two pages on the wiki. So being able to have that in every version of COHA is a great way to you know, spread, you know, who's in charge of things. You just have to open your product, go to the about page and click on release team, and it's all there. And there is a timeline that says, you know, these are the things, this is each, the date of each release of COHA. And this is the date that I think if we were to open it up right now, we would probably see every time there's a new developer that puts code into COHA, it's reflected in the release notes as this person is the 513th person to have a, you know, code added to COHA, and it's all right there in the product every time. So I'll pass this on to whoever else wants to speak.
Thank you so much. Hello, Chris Hallberg from the ViewFind project at Villanova. What you were saying just now and what this some of your bullet points, Jen, had me thinking about what that contribution would look like. And it kind of comes out in two ways, is that Viewfind now has a newsletter. And I like the idea of the release notes. We do at least two releases every year, would be really great, especially with that bot that you pointed out. But one thing is, it's I'm thinking is, when we made that contribution, Damien Katz, the project head, would basically have three pages of responsibilities next to him, including the newsletter, including the wiki, including maintaining this community contributor thing. But I think that's important, because working in Villanova with Damien, I always look for opportunities to take things off of his plate, like the newsletter and the meeting notes. And I think if someone is coming in from the non-code side to see, wow, Damien does a lot, he doesn't have to do the end of the year report about how many pull requests there's been. I can do that for him. I think is another way to kind of invite people into the project, just to see I think Damien is the shoulders of the project stand on. And I think that he needs more credit for all the small things he does in those ways. And putting them out there will let people take them off his plate. So,
yeah, making it visible, all that invisible work, I think is definitely one good side of it. The chaos people, for theirs, if you want to get added to the list, you actually add yourself. So there doesn't have to be one person doing it. And I think one good thing about that, potentially, like you're talking about hyping ourselves up, sometimes it's good to, right? This can help with things like imposter syndrome. If you're like realistic about what you're doing, and you can be like, yeah, I spent a lot of time on those two pages, I'm going to write down that I spent a lot of time on those two pages. Like, that's good practice for you also to learn how to keep yourself going, how to represent yourself in your career. Yeah. But that's, Damien is definitely amazing.
To that end also, we think a lot about the non-code people who have to customize their Viewfind instances when they're not comfortable doing that. Having a page that they can go and add themselves as having done that, or if they see a project that they like, seeing who did that to ask them questions, I think would also help. You know, I kind of like the way that it kind of recurses, kind of spreads out and kind of keeps growing. It's like a viral kind of moment. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, so really community focused, I guess.
We have a pretty structured permission system for who gets to edit the GitHub, but we should probably keep the wiki as open as possible for those documentation contributions. So,
so seeing Damien here actually reminded me too, and as I was preparing for my talk, I realized like there are so many people who are about to retire, right? Like, I remember when Damien's hair was not gray.
Yeah.
And I'm just blonde, so I'm lucky. Like, I can hide it. but like, there's so many people who are about to retire, and we haven't felt that in the, like, in open source in libraries, the way that we should be prepared for. I was doing that math for the OCFL editors. They didn't know I was doing this, but I was asking each of the four, the boys, that's what I call them, because they're all boys. I was asking them, like, how old are they? And I realized they will all be gone before I'm 5 years away from retirement, right? They're all much older than me and will have retired. And so in some respects, they don't have to think about what happens after. They're, whether they acknowledge it or not, or even have considered this or not, we could talk about, but I'm the one who will have to figure out, like, what happens when they start to go. And I think that's something we need to acknowledge, and perhaps like a list, like what Chaos is doing, is a way of identifying who can pick up the pieces. Because if Damien were to leave tomorrow, right? You know, anyway, that's something to think about.
That list. Yeah. And I think that that Nebraska slash bus factor slash lottery factor, whatever you want to call it, people look at that a lot for the code contributors, but a lot less for leadership, governance, you know, this sort of non-code side. Yeah.
Yeah. For the viewers at home, what you said, if Damien left tomorrow, my eyes got real big.
Gen X, we're small but mighty and we're going to retire. We hope. Anything else? Okay. And yeah, I do want to say the keynote this morning I thought was terrific. It was like everything that I'd been worrying about for the last year, like dumped out of my brain. It was amazing. So yeah. Okay. Well, have a good rest of the day and keep thinking about this in your individual products. And I'm sure we'll think about it in Folio. So yeah. Thanks everybody online.